the 23rd of April, and we're finishing up convertible securities today. And I'm going to review more bonds, calculations, and maybe get started on Chapter 11. But first, we want to take a look at how well we're doing. And if it weren't for Caterpillar and Apple, look at that. That's the reason my mutual funds are so nice. You know, look at that. If you get one or two stinkers out of 200, it's not a big deal. But I think, I mean, I'm really thinking Apple is a great buy right now. It's just phenomenal. Caterpillar, the look at Procter & Gamble, Toyota, not bad. Not bad. Any comments? Any criticisms?
What's the order?
Coca-Cola, 15%. People drink fizzy sugar water with a brown crayon, dipped in it all around the world, give themselves diabetes. 9. Just 9. Not 10. Okay. All right. Also, we want to announce we're going to have exam number 4 next Tuesday. It will be on bonds, 9 and 10. And then asset allocation. And I was debating whether I wanted to include, or whether we want to, I used to word D, what we're doing with convertible securities. But the more I think about it, the more I'm like, I don't really want to deal with them. But we do need to discuss them. So there may be a few questions on convertible securities. They will be very generic. And so we're going to go over some of the bond calculations today. Maybe get started on Chapter 11. We'll finish up Chapter 11. We'll review, because we're going to have at least one constant perpetual and one discounted cash flow on the exam also. If there's one thing you're going to be able to do before you leave, it's going to be about how to do these. Okay, let's get started. Let us take a look. Oh, first we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Did I tell you about poor Mrs. Wiggins? This is a very sad story. Very sick. We're doing Battle of the Sexes jokes. So Mrs. Wiggins was called to the hospital because her husband had a serious heart attack. And they've been together for years. So she rushes to the hospital. And the surgeon comes out, and the surgeon is covered in blood. Yeah, it's very sad. It doesn't look good. And the surgeon looks at her and says, "I'm sorry, Mrs. Wiggins. Your husband's dead. He's gone." And she said, "He's gone?" And the surgeon said, "Yes, we did everything we could. I'm so sorry." So Mrs. Wiggins goes and sits down. And about 20 minutes later, she gets up and she walks over to the nurse and says, "Where's my husband?" And the nurse looks at her and says, "Mrs. Wiggins, your husband is dead. He's gone. I'm so sorry." She said, "He's gone?" "Yes." So she goes back and sits down. She does this about 2 more times, right? So 20 minutes. And they call the social worker to come down and help. And they tell the social worker, he says, "I'll take care of it, no problem." So he goes over to Mrs. Wiggins and says, "Mrs. Wiggins, can I help you? Can I call a cab? Is there somebody who can take you home? You can't stay here all night. Your husband's dead. He's gone. They've already taken his body to the mortuary." She said, "No, I'm all right. I just like the way it sounds." How long have you been married?
12 years.
12 years. Okay, wait another 20 years. Happy what?
Happy that you're married.
Look around at all the people who are married. Are they happy?
You're making me not
want to
get married.
I'm not trying to make you make any decision. I just want you to see, look around. My wife, when we were, I asked us to get married, she said yes. If you wanted to get married, she said yes. She goes, "Now we're going to be happy, aren't we?" And I looked at her and said, "What?" Look at all the people who are married. Are they happy? And she goes, "No." I said, "Why should we be different?" You
know what I mean? The happy people on the planet are married men, and the second happy people are single women.
Right, exactly. And the most unhappiest people are unmarried men. In fact, they don't live as long as married men. That's the statistic. But the married men say, no, it just seems longer. Anyway. Okay, fine. All right, so now, what are we going to do? I have to keep the lights up. I apologize, because it's very difficult to see what's going on here. the Battle of the Sexes jokes are the best jokes. So who doesn't have a corporate bond from last Thursday? I'm sorry. Preferred stock and convertible securities. Convertible securities from last week. It's the chapter 18. That's what we're going to do today. Yeah. We're going to do some calculations on it. You have to check for it. All right, so let's click. Right here? Yeah. So let's quickly go through. This is where we stopped. We got through a few of these slides. Let's go through them again. We've done the most important folks. We've done the short-term mutual funds, stocks, bonds. And now we're essentially done. We'll take a look at these guys. They're not that important, in my humble opinion. But we'll take a look at them. And then maybe today, depends on when we get done, we'll start and finish asset allocation, which is an attempt to sort of tie it all together. Pass this around. Remember, as soon as you get on from the email list or some mailing list for that you're interested in investing, you're going to start to get scams. I mean, solicitation in the mail, and here's one of them. Flipping San Diego. Look at these people. Have you ever tried to walk around like this? It's not easy. It's hard to do. And here they are for only $2,995. They'll teach you how to flip it. Here's a two-bedroom, one bath for only $22,000 that you can buy and turn around and sell for $200,000.
Got that in the mail.
You got that in the mail?
Seminars. Great.
Well, that's the free. The two-hour seminar is simply a commercial for the two-day seminar or the three-day seminar, which is only
$2,000.
Only $2,000. But folks, don't worry, because in 3 weeks you have made that back. You have doubled your money. So don't worry about putting that card, and remember that credit card, because you're going to pay off that credit card and all your other credit cards. And I know somewhere in your house is something that you spent $2,000 for. That's not doing anything. This is going to do it. You think I could make a lot of money if I didn't have any ethics? These people give me the creeps. But they're going to come after you. Definitely be aware of that. What do they do with it? I'm always going to do things. Seriously. Okay, good. All right, preferred stocks. What are preferred stocks? Well, I wish they weren't called preferred stocks, but that's their name. Because they have a prior claim. So stocks are, I should put them at the bottom. Stocks are at the end of the line. If anything is left after a company goes bankrupt, that's the stockholders get it. But it's never anything left. First in line are the bondholders. Well, not really. Who's first in line? The tax man and anybody who, the payroll, the employees. And so preferred are in between, above common stocks. That's why they're called preferred. They're not preferred by most of us. They pay a fixed dividend normally. And sometimes people lump them in with bonds. Even though they're not bonds, they are definitely equity. They represent equity. They don't count as debt. You don't have to pay the dividends, just like any other stock, if they don't want to pay the dividends. But there's a cumulative feature that we'll see in a bit. What are the advantages? Well, the biggest advantage is not something that's important to us unless we're a corporation, because there are tremendous tax benefits if you are a corporation and you own the preferred. So you've heard of Warren Buffett and his Berkshire Hathaway company. It's a holding company, it's called. They own Geico. They own the Washington Post, Dairy Queen, Burlington Santa Fe Railroad. Own a big chunk of McDonald's and Coca-Cola and Procter & Gamble. Well, if they own preferred stock, they pay fewer tax dollars on their dividends than you or I. So right off the bat, we are at a disadvantage. For example, during the turmoil of 2008 and 9, Government Sachs, I'm sorry, what's it called? Goldman Sachs, right, not Government Sachs, sorry, Government Sachs, Goldman Sachs. They're sometimes called Government Sachs because what happens is the people who work there, the higher-ups, often wind up working for the Treasury
or the you know, the Federal Reserve Bank, and then they, after they're done that, they go back to Goldman Sachs, and then they go pick up a revolving door, so they're called government stocks. They needed cash. They all needed cash. And Warren Buffett was sitting there just waiting for the organic matter to hit the ventilating device. So he was able to inject $5 billion cash into their coffers, which they badly needed. They issued him preferred stock. He didn't buy the regular stock that you and I would buy, the common stock. He bought the preferred. The preferred stock on this came with a 10% dividend. 10%. That's pretty darn awesome. And remember, that has to be paid before the common stockholders get their dividends. And to... Now this, so this share class, remember there were different share classes? This preferred stock could not be sold. It was just Warren Buffett's and Berkshire Hathaway's. If Government Sachs wanted to stop paying the 10%, they had to buy it back, give them back the $5 billion, and give them a 10% prepayment penalty. Another year's worth of interest. Another year's worth of dividends, basically. So after about 3 or 4 years, when they raised the $5 billion, they said... $5 billion and $500 million. They said, "Mr. Buffett, we want our shares back." And he said, "No problem. Here, give me another $500 million." So, do you think you and I are going to be buying preferred? No, most of the time, no. There's some people who like it because they're as we're going to see. We're going to take a look at some of the charts, and you're going to see they're very, very predictable, very flat charts. They have the same problems that bonds have. They're just susceptible to inflation. They can be, and they have the same problem as stocks have, that the dividends can be suspended or postponed, which you can't do with a bond. And they lack the substantial capital gains of the common stock for companies that do well, and they don't pay as well as bonds. So when people say they have the best of both worlds, I more look at it, they have the worst of both worlds. Here is the preferred stock versus bonds. So the blue is the interest rate for bonds. So you see that bonds, high-grade corporates, in general pay more than preferred. Yippee. The dividend yield should look very familiar. You take the annual dividend income divided by the current market price. So if they're paying us $2 every year, then if the market price is $27.50, we're getting $7.27. Does this look familiar? Yeah? Go like this. No, I don't. See? Yeah? Okay, good. And then, as with bonds, the prices fluctuate mostly inversely to interest rates, although there's a greater a risk of non-payment of dividends, because dividends are not mandatory, whereas interest payments are. Unlike bonds, where the bond issuer is in default if the interest is not paid, so if we're looking for a way to price these things, what we would do is we would take the income they pay us and divide it by either the prevailing interest rates or what our required rate of return is, and that should look familiar. This is the zero growth model. Take the income they've given us and divide it by either the current interest rates or what we want from our investment, and that should give us our price. So if the dividend income were $2.50 and the prevailing interest rates were 12%, or we required a 12% rate of return, we would be expecting to pay $20.83. And this is where I think we ended, right? On Tuesday, y'all Thursday, y'all remember? Yeah, right. Okay, now, preferred. The characteristic of preferred is that some of the characteristics of preferred are that they can be converted. Converted, and we're going to spend a lot more time on that, and we're going to do some calculations in a bit when we get done with preferred stock. This allows you to take your preferred stock and convert it into common stock. So your preferred stock was paying a fixed dividend for many years, but then the common stock exploded because the company did something great, and now everybody wants to buy their common stock. So you could take your preferred stock and swap it for common stock. You can't go the other way, though. Once you've moved your preferred, once you've converted it to the common stock, that's it. You can't go the other way. Some preferred stock they float. They change as interest rates change. Adjustable rate preferred. Most do not. Most preferred stock, they pay 5%, they pay 3% or 7%, and they will always pay that on the par value. And then just as we saw with senior bonds and junior bonds, there are some pecking orders where some have more seniority than others. And then here's the one that you need to remember. Cumulative. We didn't get to this last week, right? Did we get to cumulative? I don't think we did. You're not talking to me. Do you remember cumulative?
No.
No. Okay, good. Okay, so good. We didn't get it. This is where we're... Just make sure I don't want to go too much review. Preferred stock are there to give people a fixed, a reliable income. But they're not bonds. They can be suspended. If you have cumulative preferred, then the company can suspend your dividends. They can say, look, we don't have the cash to pay you this year. But subsequent years, if they want to pay any dividends to the preferred stockholders, and certainly any dividends to the common stockholders, they have to backfill. They have to go back and pay you the dividends that they suspended. They're called arrears. They're dividends that are in arrears. You like that name? In arrears? I don't know if it makes any sense to you, but that's what it's called. If the dividends were suspended, if they're cumulative, then they must be backfilled. So if they were supposed to pay you, $2, right? They're supposed to pay you $2 last year, and they didn't do it. The next year, before they pay any other dividends to anybody else, they have to go back and pay you the $2. Make sense? Now, what would you rather have? Cumulative or non-cumulative? All the things being equal, and never are, you'd rather have... Everyone wants to say cumulative. Wait till I ask you. What would you rather have, cumulative or non-cumulative? All right, cool. Now, some preferred bonds can be called away. Just like bonds, if the interest rates fall, the issuer will want to refinance the preferred stock so they can call them away. Otherwise, they could just go out into the marketplace and buy them from people, but some people, investors may not want to get rid of them. And then some preferred is participating, that allow investors to participate in earnings beyond the stated dividend rate. What's the bottom line of preferred stock? It is normally owned by corporations. Some individual investors may acquire a taste for them, but in my personal opinion, you're better off going with common stocks for growth and bonds for income. Okay, now let's take a look, and then the next is, okay, convertibles. Okay, let's take a look at a couple of these things. The problem is these things are really weird. They're just strange. You look at them, and they're things that they don't make, what's going on here? What's going on? I can't use this. Yeah. Okay, here's the, and there's a preferred. There's a preferred one right here. Here's a preferred security. And we're looking at the last, what, 6 or 7 years or so? Back to 2006. And what we see is that pretty much, ignore this right now. But you see that does the stock price change that much? No. What was this? 2008, 2009, right? So they're highly predictable. Now, here is an ETF, an exchange-traded fund, that does the same thing. It basically follows and buys the ETF itself, the mutual fund, buys preferred stock. And you notice, I wish we could go back further. I picked it on Max, and that's about, goes back to 2005 or so. But you see that apart from 2008, even though since 2010 the market's been up, what, 40-50%? Maybe 40% since 2010? After the initial run-up of 2009-2010. But look at the preferred. What have they done? Tough question. Well, if you ignore 2008, it's been fairly flat. Makes sense? Stable. Stable. So why are you buying preferred? Income, but that income can be suspended, unlike bonds. Make sense? Nod your head, yes?
See.
Okay, question.
So it's like the same, like less volatile than stocks?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, preferred stock, notice, If we looked at the S&P 500, let's look at the S&P 500. Okay, come over here, baby. SPY. Here's the if we look at the S&P 500, come on, go. Well, this is, let's go look five down. This is lots of years.
And this is a logarithmic scale. Fine, it's feeling wasn't. Let's do
interactive. Yeah. You see, here was the,
I wanted 5 years. Why didn't it change to the 2 year?
Where's the 5 year? Okay, see, here's the fall off for 2008-09, but then it came back up, down, up, down, up. So here's the S&P 500, which are common stocks. They're all common stocks. And so this is more volatile, but it was a whole lot more rewarding, wasn't it? Riding the roller coaster up. Whereas you look at the preferred, and it's pretty boring. Does that make sense? How'd you head, Jess? Okay, good. All right, now, let's continue. Keep it up. Wrong one. Oh, no, that's the right one. We just got to resume. Okay, how we doing? I'm just starting to think. Convertible securities. Convertible securities are preferred stock and convertible bonds. So we did the convertible preferred. We did the preferred stock first. Now we're going to look at the convertible securities, which includes convertible bonds and convertible preferred stock. But mostly what we'll use is we'll use bond examples. Same idea for preferred stock. We'll mostly use bond examples. They're sometimes called deferred equity. Deferred equity. Because eventually they're going to wind up, if they do, convert into common stock. They're eventually going to wind up in common stock. If the company does well, then it'll make sense for them to convert. Some people call them a kicker, an equity kicker, because normally when we buy bonds or preferred stock, we're buying them for income. And when we buy things for income, we don't normally get the advantages of ownership. We're buying it, we're basically loaning our money and we're getting the income. But if we are buying something that can be later converted into common stock, if the common stock does well, then we can participate in the success of the company. Understand? Now think, when these things are sold, would it make sense for you to convert them? Probably not. Or why even sell them? They're selling them to you for you so that you can get income, and then maybe down the line you can make money because the common stock did very well. And it turns out that it often doesn't. You know, that we're going to take a look at some of the different calculations in a bit, and not very exciting. What are some of the conditions? There's the conversion period. A time period during which a convertible issue can be converted. Normally, they won't let you convert them for 5 or 10 years just because they want you to wait and hold on to the bond until the stock has done well. The conversion ratio is the number of shares of common stock into which a convertible security can be converted. So you have one bond, a $1,000 bond, and we always use $1,000 for our bonds. If it's a convertible bond, they may give you 20 shares. They may give you 20 shares of stock for your one bond. So you take your bond, and you may have more than one bond. Let's say you have one bond. You say, here's my bond. I want 20 shares. Now, if that were the case, the conversion price would be $1,000 divided by 20 shares, $50 a share. Now, when you're buying that convertible bond, do you think the price is for $1,000? Let's say it's a new bond issue, you get $1,000. You think the price of the stock is going to be anywhere near 50? No, because if it were 70 or 80 or 100, you bought the bond, what would you do? Immediately you would convert it, right? No, it doesn't work that way. For in this case, let's say the price is 20 or 15. So normally the price, the conversion price, is going to be far, I'm sorry, the market price, the price of the stock, the actual what the market is buying and selling the stock for, is going to be a whole lot less than the conversion price. The conversion value is an indication of what a conversible issue would trade for if it were priced to sell on the basis of its stock value. So you take the ratio times the market price. Now let's say it's been several years and this stock has done very well. Our convertible bond is converted for 20 to 1. Let's say the stock price is 60 bucks. The stock has done well. Our bond is worth $1,200 to us in common stock. Are you with me? If you took 20 shares of stock times the current market price of 60, that's 1,200 bucks. However, the convertible bond would probably sell for more than the $1,200 because of the ability to convert the stock. Plus, the bond is still earning interest. It's still a bond while it's earning interest. Make sense? And so that's called the conversion premium. The amount by which the market price of a convertible security exceeds its conversion value. So you take whatever the market price is, whatever the bond happens to be selling for, subtract that conversion value, what it would be worth to us if we took the bond, converted it to stock, and then sold the stock or just held on to the stock. So for example, if that $1,200 conversion value for that bond, if the bond were actually selling for $1,400, it would be $1,400 minus $1,200 or $2,000 conversion value. All right, so why don't we do some calculations before we go on? I'll tell you folks, there's an assignment for chapter 18. It's the easiest 5 points all semester long. I'm going to pass it out. It is the, you'll do it and you'll go, that was too easy. You get the sense I really don't like these things. I try my best. That's one of the weird things about that book, the security analysis book, the second one that Benjamin Graham wrote with Christopher Dodd, or no, I can't remember his name. Everybody got one? It goes into so much detail on preferred stock, and I didn't finish the book. Okay. All right. So, do we need more light? You can read. You guys are good. I can't. Who wants to read number one? Who wants to read number one? How about it there? Okay. Right. What's the conversion price? So you have a $1,000 bond, and they will give you 50 shares. So the formula is the bond par value divided by the conversion ratio. And so what's the price? $1,000 bond divided by how many shares? 50, so that's 20. So the conversion price is 20 bucks. When the price of the stock hits 20 bucks, then, or higher, essentially, if we had a $1,000 bond, it would make sense for us to convert that bond into common stock. Make sense? Who'd I lose? All right, divide 1,000 by 50. They're going to give us 50 shares for our bond. If we take $1,000 divided by 50 shares, if the bond were selling for a high, I'm not sorry, the stock, if the market price of the stock were selling for higher than $20, we would want to convert that bond into the 50 shares of stock, and then we could turn around and sell the stock if we wanted to or hang on to it. Okay? Number two. Who wants to read number two? How about it there, Oliver? All right.
So Brendan Ban has $1,000 face value and a conversion price of $25 to share the performance value. What is the conversion rate?
So the face value will be $1,000. The conversion price is $25. So what is the conversion ratio? 50? Be careful, right? Yeah. The point, it's like a little step. You don't want to screw up here. You look at the formula, it's the bond par value, $1,000, divided by the conversion price of $25. And how many shares?
40
shares. So they're going to give you 40 shares for every bond you have. Okay, who snuck in? You put 50. You got one? Okay, and then number three, the convertible bond has $1,000 face value. Its market price, the bond is currently selling for $1,200. So the bond has a face value of $1,000. When it was issued, it was worth $1,000. But now it's selling for $1,200. It has a conversion ratio of 40 shares. Sorry, I can't read. Oh, you guys got to help me. I can't read. I'm sorry? I don't know. I can't read that. You read it. Oh, there's more light. Okay, if the stock price is currently selling for what? $30 per share. What is the conversion premium? Oh, what's the conversion value? Okay, the value is equal to the stock price times the ratio. So the price times the ratio. The price is $30. The ratio is 40 shares per... Do you have one of these, Priscilla?
Yes.
Okay. So $30 times 40 shares? Everybody see that? I was thinking ahead. So what's the price is 30. This is too easy. I hope you're not getting confused, because these formulas are pretty darn easy. And if I'm confusing, I apologize. But the price is $30. They're going to give us 40 shares if we turn in our bond. So what's the value? What's the conversion value of that bond? Everyone should say $1,200. Wait till I ask you. What's the conversion value? All right. So the bond is selling for $1,300. So the premium, exactly, the market price minus the conversion value, what it's worth to us if we were to convert it. And so the premium is $100. Do you think you can do these? Sometimes? All right, let me pass them out. They're too difficult. Let me pass out the... Did I pass out the assignment sheet? No, I didn't. I didn't pass... I passed out the assignment sheets on... Oh, they're on the back. They're on the back of the assignment. That's right. And I've given out... You have one? I've given them all out. Whew. Some of you guys just got to remember to bring them. I got a couple more. But I gave out a bunch of them last Thursday. Okay, fine. Let's continue. Now, the conversion equivalent, I'm not going to ask you to do this, but the price at which the common stock would have to sell in order to make the convertible security worth its present price. It's also called the conversion parity. If you take the Series 7, they're going to ask you these things. The market price of the convertible divided by the conversion rate. So if that same bond that we're selling for $1,400 in the presentation was a 20-to-1 ratio, the price of the share of stock would have to be $70 to make it worth our while to equivalent to the bond's price to make it worth our while to convert it. The market price of the common stock should be close to 70, but would probably be less than 70 because of the conversion premium. And here is a graph. If it doesn't make sense, I apologize, but it's from your book. And the idea is, if you have a bond that can be converted into stock, and the stock price is such that it makes sense for you to convert it, what's going to happen is the convertible security is going to track the stock, probably selling for a little bit more of the conversion premium, until such time that the stock price plummets. And then, remember, it's a bond. It's still paying interest. It doesn't stop paying interest. Same thing is true for the preferred stock. It still pays dividends. It doesn't stop paying dividends. So there's a floor here for the market price of the convertible bond. If the stock price plummets, then the thing is worth what it would be worth as a bond, until such time as the stock price recovers and makes it worth somewhat close or a little bit more than the value of the stock.
Yeah.
Why? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob. Yeah.
Why is it convertible so bad?
I don't think they're bad. They're just kind of boring. And they're not that exciting. I mean, you talk to people who I've really only known one person who actually invested in these things, and he thought they were boring. He just liked the stability. But you go back and look at over time, and they pay income, yeah, but for the bonds. So, and they usually pay, they usually don't go bankrupt, but they do. I mean, just like some bond issuers do. And there's not that many. So what it reminds me of, I don't know if it's a good analogy, it reminds me of convertible cars. They sound sexy, don't they? Doesn't it sound like convertible and wind blowing through your hair? Until you own one. And then it's, oh, I can't get the damn top off. It's raining. I can't get the top down. It's roasting. I can't, you know, somebody puts their foot through it or something. Or accidentally go, oops, I'm sorry, with the knife, waving the knife around, slices it up. So if you ever go start investing in these things and you do well, come talk to me, all right? Because I want to hear about it. I really don't know anybody who actually likes them, who actually uses them. And now, Ethel, your question. That answer your question? Why? So what's the bottom line on convertibles? Convertible securities allow you to partake in the potential capital appreciation of the common stock with less risk because of the income. If the stock price plummets, the common stock price plummets, at least we're getting our income back. It's worth it what a bond or preferred stock is. If the stock price is below the conversion price, then the convertible securities price will be kept up because of the value from producing income and the fact that it's a bond or it's preferred stock producing income. But you pay for the reduced risk via the conversion premium. In my personal opinion, I believe most of us individual retail investors are best served by focusing their attention on common stocks for growth and dividend income too, and income from bonds. But there are always exceptions. There's always people like chocolate and vanilla, and some people like, well, this is not even strawberry. This is like, that's a really weird flavor. Pineapple ice cream. There's like pineapple. Anyway, that's it for convertible securities. Questions, thoughts? Okay, now, what do we want to do? We have a couple of choices. Get away. We can start on chapter 11, and then we'll have more time, but I don't think we'll finish it today. That's the problem. Why don't we do some calculate? What? Sorry. Yeah, this is when you get a little bit behind. Well, I would rather review now than review on Thursday. What I'd rather do is, this takes about one presentation, a little bit less. What I'd rather do now is do some calculations for chapter 10, because we did worksheet number 1, we'll do worksheet number 2. But those of you who feel really comfortable, don't feel you need to go through the bond calculations again, you can split. How's that? All right. But first, before you do that, at the end of every semester, I like to do something. When I used to teach computers, we called it. It's going to end. Just like everything ends, even your life, everything ends. The world, you know, we know the world ends. Don't you know that?
I know.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know.
Okay, the sun. Now I've heard two different. I'm not an astronomer, but the sun is going to start to get really big. Okay, it's going to start turning into a giant.
Well,
I will. I don't know about you. it's only a billion or 2 years from now.
But
yeah, see, the sun's going to get bigger. Well, it'll be 1,700 degrees on the face of the Earth. So we got to go. We got to get out of here somewhere. You know, if we want to stick around, if we want to continue as a species, we've got to leave Earth. But we've got another billion years to worry about it. More important is who's going to be on Dancing with the American Idol. That's more important. What's it called? Anyway. What?
That might be the next big thing.
The next big thing? Dancing with the American Idol? What amazes me is that people actually, you only have so much time on this earth. And yet, people spend it watching television. Amazing. Okay, here you go. So at the end of every semester, when I taught computers, we called it stump the nerd. So now, I didn't stump the broker, didn't sound right. Baffle the broker sounded better. So you can ask me any question about finance, about investments and securities, about mutual funds, anything. And if you want to ask him, where do babies come from? Why is the sky blue? If you're so smart, how come you're not rich? So any questions. So take about 7 minutes. Okay? And I'll get more of them if you have to think of another question by Thursday or next week. But it does take me a few weeks to do this, believe it or not, because sometimes people ask real questions, and I got to go research them. Okay, that's something I didn't do.
And
I, oh yeah, people have asked really tough questions.
Anything.
Have you saved any really, questions that have come up?
Yeah, I save them all, actually. Some of them are really good. And every once in a while, I'll sneak in one of the really best questions. I'll just keep using it because it's really good. So I won't tell you which one. A lot of people ask about me. They ask questions about me. Last spring, somebody said, because I always make fun of marriage, somebody said, are you happily married? And so my answer was, yes. My wife told me to tell you that we are very happily married. And it looks... So take about... Okay, and then at 20 after, we will do worksheet number 2 of bonds. So who needs worksheet number 1 or 2? Who did not come prepared? All right, raise your hands high. Who doesn't have the worksheet? Okay. What? No, we still have the final after that. But after this material, after we get done chapter 11, everything else is gravy, folks. Options, futures, margining, shorting, that's all gravy. Plus, it's something I hope you never do. If you want to, it's up to you. You have to learn it for the Series 7. But it's not in your best interest. Okay, so any questions at all? And I'll bring, as I said, I'll bring more of these if you have more questions later on. But I just like to get started early.
That's if you want to go see what how many people are foolish and sign up for their seminar.
So I read that. Is it selling houses or something like
DVDs? Well, they're going to teach you how to buy a house for $19,500 and sell it for $225,000.
What's the scam part of that?
The scam part is they're going to teach you how to buy a house for $19,500 and sell it for
$250,000.
Well, they're going to they want you to sign up for their seminar, which is, you know, $3,000 for 2 days. That's the scam. But the scam, I mean, think about it. If you could buy a house for $20,000, do you think you're going to be able to turn around and sell it for $200,000 in a month?
If you invested more than you
could, a lot of, by the way, a lot of these houses that they're selling are in Detroit, okay, where they will give you the house if you invest more than the house. Yeah, exactly, as Christian said, if you walk in there and fix it up because they're falling apart and they're going to have to tear them down anyway. If you buy the house for whatever it costs for the taxes, you know, their back taxes are $6,000. They'll give you the house for $6,000. Got to pay the taxes. And then you fix it up. They'll give you the key to the city and shake your hand. Meanwhile, all the other houses around the block are being torn down. And there are large swaths of Detroit that are being turned into farmland now. Yeah. People are leaving in droves. Pretty amazing.
Why?
A good question. Well, it's been, you know, 30 years of decline for the automotive world. And it used to be that it took many, many people to build a car.
Right. Now it's all robots.
It's all robots. There's not a
yourself too.
What?
Also.
Not yet. The idea is you're going to be able to get a 3D printer to make all the parts? No, the cars. Yeah, my understanding is it's gotten better. The first one they did, they used a 3D printer to create an 8K, or not 8K, with the Bushmaster.
The
AR-15. But it only shot like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, but still, not everybody did. Now they shoot over 6 times.
Before it falls apart.
Yeah.
600 rounds before it falls apart. How long does a normal one last? How long does a normal yeah. No, come on.
No, that's only break is metal.
Okay.
That metal, but that part of polycarbonate.
Right.
It's more resistant, but the real one is made of metal.
And so those assault rifles last forever?
The main issue is the holster, that's the part that breaks off.
Okay. I don't know anything about guns. Never.
You put out a gun, like, oh, that's not cool though.
Think about the security issues.
Too late now. It's already too late. Did you ever hear the metaphor, every man has his own gun?
Yeah.
It's not a metaphor. There are more guns in the United States than there are men. There are about 160 million men, 155 million men, right? There's 210 million guns.
You can't, if you're playing, you can't really kind of gun. Throw a gun.
You print out the parts and you put them together.
Not all the parts.
Does that have to be metal?
Yeah. You can only print out like the holster, like the ammo clip.
I'm not interested. You know who you're most likely to kill if you have a gun in your house? Yourself or somebody you love. You get really, really, really angry and then you shoot them or shoot yourself and then you go, oops. My wife was so angry at me once. She said, I am so angry, I want to go get a gun and shoot you. And I said, California has a 14-day waiting period. And she went, ah! I said, that's the reason why they have a waiting period. It's going to get you cool off so you won't kill me. And see, I'm not worried about knives because I can run faster than she can. Okay, you ready? I'll duck. She's not a good one. No, I said 20. I said at 20. All right, he wants to fill. You got a couple more questions? All right. But get worksheet number 2 out. Let's do worksheet number 2. Okay.
Okay, I'm going to turn the lights on and we don't need this screen anymore. Wow. I know, it's tough on your eyes. We got to get a new bulb. That bulb is it's on its way out. Now, if you, again, if you believe that you have no problems doing these bond calculations, then you are free to go. Seriously. Because I know I hate to let you go early, but I want to spend time reviewing. So we're going to do worksheet number 2. Got it? Okay. Now you're going to need the formula sheet. So get out the formula sheet. And I have a three-ring binder. I forgot to bring it. But if you want a three-ring binder, follow me in my office. I'll bring this. I'll give you. I finally got it. It's a decent one. So you're going to need the bond formula worksheet, formula sheet with the tables on the back. Kenneth, Blanca. Okay. Que bueno. All right, so number one, worksheet number 2. A 7%, where's my crayon? A 7% 30-year bond has a par value of 1,000. Now, all the bonds and all of our problems will always have a $1,000 par value. Most all bonds have $1,000. Some have $5,000, $10,000. So it's a 7% bond. It's 30 years. And the call price is $1,030. So if they want to call it back from us, they have to pay us $1,030. So the $30 is called the call premium. And it's, you can think of it as a prepayment penalty that some loans have. Most loans, most especially mortgage loans, do not come with a prepayment penalty, but some of them do. They're going to give you a really good rate, and they tell you, we don't want you to pay us back. If you do, you got to pay us extra. The same thing is true here. We don't want you, we got this great bond, we don't want you to take it away from us, but if you do take it away from us, you got to pay us. Okay, yeah, put that right over here. Nathan's right there. If you do pay us back early, we're going to ask for a $30 premium, call premium. And the market price is $1,060. So, first of all, let me ask you, it's not on here. What's the coupon yield? What's the nominal yield? It's a 7% 30-year bond, so what's the coupon yield? $70 is the interest we're going to get every year, and that's the same as the coupon yield times the $1,000, or 7%. So if it's a 7% bond, what's the coupon yield? 7%. The coupon, you're right. I'm sorry, I'm asking for the wrong thing. The interest, what's the nominal interest rate?
7%.
What's the coupon rate? 7%. You say 7%. You can say 70, they'll know what you're talking about. Because then you know, oh, that's the amount of interest. Because that's why they're $1,000. If it's a 7% bond, the coupon rate, the nominal yield, the coupon yield, they all mean the same thing. We usually express it as 7%. The $70 is the annual interest. So if somebody says, what's the coupon rate on your bond, and you say $70, they'll go, oh, it's a 7% bond. You understand? But they want to hear what the interest rate is. So what's the coupon yield?
7%.
Right. And nominal yield, interest rate, coupon rate, they all meet the same coupon rate. All right, so we don't ask that, but we want to be able to say that. But you're absolutely right. The annual interest is $70, and that's what we're going to have to use in the calculation. So the current yield, what's the formula? That thing, the annual interest divided by the
market price.
Right. And so the annual interest is $70. The coupon yield is 7%. Don't put 7 cents. Okay, you put 7 cents, and what do you get? Sabapo. Books left. Don't put 7 cents. And then we divide that by the market price of 1060, and your calculator tells us that this bond is currently yielding. You're letting Oliver have all the fun. Well, where's your calculators, folks? What? That your calculator's sleeping? You let it sleep in. 0.06603. Okay, so 6.6% would be okay? Or 6.60. We normally like to see two decimal places to the right of the decimal point. It's up to you. You can just write out what your calculator tells you, and I'll take it. You don't have to convert it to a percent sign. Careful rounding. Some of you can't round. It's very embarrassing. You're going to go out there, and they're going to say, where did you go? Where did you learn how to round? Great. Okay, now, I'm sorry? Here's his phone number. I tried my best. I did try my best. So now the yield to maturity is the same formula, except we now have to take into account the fact that this bond, when it is, we're buying it at 1060, but when it's redeemed, what's it going to be? Only 1,000. When this bond is redeemed, we are only going to get $1,000. So we're paying a premium for the bond, right? So this yield to maturity formula says, I want to take the annual interest again, but instead of dividing it by the market price, I'm going to divide it by the average of the price, market price, and the face value, or the par value. So instead of dividing it by the market price, we divide it by the average of what we had to pay for it and what it's going to be redeemed for. I'm sorry? In the top part, this is the tricky part. This is the one that drives people nuts. The face value minus the market price divided by the number of years to maturity. What this term is doing is this term is taking into account that every year we get closer to the day it redeems, it's going to either go down in value towards the par value, the redeemed value of 1,000, if it's a premium bond, or if it's a discount bond, it's going to go up to 1,000. Are you with me?
Yes.
Nod your head yes or no. I mean, one, it looks scary, doesn't it? But it's really not. I mean, once you work it out, you go, oh, okay, that makes sense. But it does look scary. When people first see it, they go, I know, I first thought, what's going on here? And I was a math major, you know, I wasn't scared, but I was trying, what's going on?
You're a math major?
Yeah, it's my undergrad degree in math. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it.
Yeah, now you can blame me.
Now you can blame me, right? Yeah, but I didn't have you in fifth grade when you learned how to round, okay? You blame your fifth grade teacher. So what's the... Okay, let's get different colors. What's the annual interest?
$70.
It's a 7% bond. What's the annual interest?
$70.
The face value plus the market value... divided by 2, so what's 1,000 plus 1,060 divided by 2?
1030.
Right, you should check it out, right? Do it in the calculator, or you can just eyeball it. You can say, oh, what's the midpoint of 1,060? That's 1,030. Everybody see that? Okay. So, we got 1,030 on the bottom here. Now, here's the bad boy. Yeah, I think I missed you. What's the face value?
1,000
minus the market price?
1,060
divided by how many years?
30
years. So 1,000 divided by 1,000, I'm done dividing. 1,000 minus 1,060 is? A minus 60,
divided by 3,
negative.
I'm sorry, by 30,
negative.
Is negative 2.
Sorry, negative 2.
Okay, let's make sure we understand that. 1,000 minus 1,060 divided by 30. 1,000 minus 1,060 is negative 60. Divided by 30 is negative 2. Use your calculator, it'll tell you. The calculator has a little negative sign there. 70 plus or minus 2 is 68. So take 68 divided by 1,030. 0.06. Same?
I know.
Okay. 6.60. What's the next number?
0.
1?
Yep.
So basically the same.
Yep.
Okay, great. Now, the yield to call is the exact same formula, but what we're going to do now is we're going to replace the face value. Oops, get rid of this guy. Watch out. Let's see. We're going to get rid of the face value and replace it with the par value, 1,030. And then we're going to get rid of the number of years of maturity. And when did it say? I didn't write that down. When is it callable? 10 years. I should have written that down. My apologies. Callable in 10 years. Okay, so that's 10. So now we do the formula again. Let's rewrite everything. Annual interest is 70. 130 minus 160 divided by 10 years. So use the call price and the number of years to call. And we divide it by the average of the call price plus the market price. So some of you can do that in your head. What's the midpoint between 1,030 and 1,060? 1,090? 45. Use your calculator. Come on, you don't have to trust me. 1045? Yeah, it's 1045. Try it. It's 2,090 divided by 2.
That's
1030. No, it's 1045. You guys got the calculator, right? All right, now, 1,030 minus 1,060 is a negative 30 divided by 10 is a negative 3. So 60 plus or minus 3, 67, 0.0, 641. What's next? I'm sorry, 641? 1, so 6.41%. Either one. All right? That took too long. All right, number two. Did I lose you? Okay, number two. A married couple from California is in the 35% federal tax bracket. That means they're doing okay, folks. You feel sorry for these people?
No.
I don't feel too sorry for them. Make over $350,000 a year. And they're in the 11% California bracket. They are looking at a 6% Arizona bond, a 5.5% California bond, and an 8% corporate bond. So how can we compare these three? How can we compare these three? Well, without doing the taxable equivalent yield calculation, you can't. Is there any calculation you do for the corporate bond?
No.
Everyone wants to say no. Is there any calculation you do for the corporate bond?
No.
If you do a calculation for the corporate bond, what do you get? Subapo. Because it is already fully taxable. So leave it alone. Now, the California couple, if they bought an Arizona bond, would they have to pay federal income tax? Never. You don't have to pay federal income tax on any muni bonds. But would they have to pay California tax?
Yes.
Yes, California is allowed to tax Arizona. So which formula are you going to use for the Arizona bond?
look at the formulas on your sheet. Where it's the one that says federal only. The one that says federal only. So what's that formula? The muni bond yield
divided by
1 minus the federal tax bracket. Everybody see that? It's on your formula sheet. So if we take the 6% divided by 1 minus the 35%, and we rewrite that as 0.06, 0.35, we wind up with 0.06 divided by
0.65.
Do it on your calculator. And so what is that Arizona bond paying us on a taxable equivalent yield basis? 0.0923. You're letting Oliver have all the fun. Okay, what's the next number, Oliver?
Zero.
Zero, great. So 9.23%. And you can write out all the numbers, your calculator will be okay. So right off the bat, who's better, the corporate bond or the Arizona bond? The Arizona bond is better on a taxable equivalent yield. We'd have to go out and get a corporate bond at 9.23%. Why don't you answer me when I answer these questions? You've got to answer. You don't have to be right. No one's grading you now. Which one's better, the Arizona or the corporate bond? Arizona bond. Now, we've got to look at the California bond. But do we pay federal income taxes on the California bond?
No.
Do we pay California taxes?
No.
If we live in the state of California, we buy a California bond. Doesn't matter where it is in California. California says, Domini, Domini, Sanctus. No problem. So what formula do we use? Taxable equivalent yield for Fed and state. Now this one's a little, it looks scary. But it's really, once we do it, I can explain it to you in a minute. It's not that tricky. You just got to make sure you do the things in the right order. You take 1 minus the federal bracket, and then you have to add the state bracket. But it is very typical for people in this tax bracket to itemize their deductions on their 1040 form, on their taxes. They usually have huge house payments, you know, $10,000, $12,000 a month for their house payment. And so they have give to charities and they have tremendous tax deductions. So we need to multiply that state tax bracket by 1 minus the federal tax bracket. So it looks like we're chasing ourselves around or chasing our tails around there because we already have that over here. But it's simply saying this is the tax break they get from itemizing their deductions. Now, in the unlikely event that they do not itemize their deductions, you would just get rid of that. In fact, it would disappear. It would be 1 minus, just get rid of it. But that's unlikely. So what's the yield for the California? What's the yield for the California? 5.5%, which we could write as 0.055. Everybody understand how we got there? I skipped a step, didn't I? You could put 5.5%, and that would be cool. What's the tax bracket for the feds? 35%. 0.35. What's the tax bracket for the state of California? See, if you don't answer me, I think you guys are completely lost. Right. No. What's the tax bracket for the state of California? 11%, which is 0.11. And then again, we got to multiply that times 1 minus the federal tax bracket of 35% again. So, just got to go and do the parentheses in order. 1 minus 0.35. You're letting Oliver do all the good. This is taking longer than I thought. I should have started at 9 o'clock. 0.65. What's 0.11 times 0.65? Your calculator should tell you somebody besides Oliver.
Seven point one.
0.0715?
Yeah.
Okay. And then you add that to the 35%. 0.4215. And then... I know it's tedious, isn't it? But it just follow. You just got to follow. So what is 1 minus 0.4215? 0.5785. 0.055. So 9.51%. Oops, one could read. You could write 9.5, or just leave it like that. That'll be good. Or 9.51%. If you do two digits to the right of the decimal point, you look at that guy. Oh, it's five or greater. Move him up one. Oof. What? That was a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. All right, now last one. Now here's where you need the table. Here's where you need the table. You got the table? Give her a table. Okay. All right. So we have annual compounding. Find the prices for the following bonds. If we have an 8% bond for 20 years. And it has gone, and interest rates have fallen to 5%. Well, right off the bat, if we bought a bond for 8% and the price, not the price, but interest rates in the surrounding investment environment have fallen to 8%, what should we expect to see the price of the bond do?
Go up.
Everyone should say go up. If interest rates have fallen, what do bond prices do?
Go up.
So this should be a premium bond. Now let's go see. Let's calculate it. What is the annual interest in dollar amount for an 8% bond? $80. Good. And what are we going to get back in 20 years? When the bond is redeemed? Always $1,000. Everyone say $1,000. What are we going to get back when the bond is redeemed?
$1,000.
Now, what is that $80 worth to us every year for the next 20 years in today's dollars? What is the present value? What is the PV, the Puerta Vallarta, of the $80 stream of investments? Which table do we use? The second, the one on the right. Maybe I should swap them. Maybe it'd be easier. But go across to 8% or 5%?
8%.
No, you go across to the one that's priced the yield.
5%.
Go across to 5%. If you go across 8% and you do the calculation, you wind up with $1,000 or like $999.95, and you go... That's because if $1,000, if an 8% bond is priced to yield 8%, it would be worth $1,000. So you go to the second number. 12.4?
62.
And now we're going to get a $1,000 payment once. So which table should we use? Stream or a lump sum?
Lump sum.
Lump sum. The first table on the left-hand side. Go across 5% down 20 years. Where's your table? What am I doing? I'm trying to get these people to do this, and they're just looking at me like, ooh, I'm drawing pictures of airplanes. What? Yeah, of course. Oh, you should hear her about her students. I tell them over and over again, you have to state your choices, and they won't do it. I have to give them a... She teaches at Cuyamaca. She teaches social work.
Why are you not until then?
This place is better. Okay. What's the number? Go across 5% down 20 years. 0.377? Is she right?
Yes.
Okay, so what's 80 times 12.462?
996.96?
I can't hear you. Okay. And then 1,000 times 377? That's easy. So if you add those two up, our bond should be selling for approximately...
You guys are used to it.
Okay. $1,373.96?
Yes.
Okay, now, so is it a premium bond?
Yes.
All right, B, because you're going to have to do this next Tuesday, and you can't ask Oliver for the answer. Because he's going to be on his own little Adinaki. We got a 6% 10-year bond, price to yield... 9%. So interest rates have gone up. What's happened to the price of our bond? It should have fallen. So what's the annual interest on a 6% bond? Everybody should say $60. And then what are we going to get at the end of 10 years? Everyone should say $1,000. Everyone's not saying $1,000. Oh, thank you. So now we go across to 6 or 9%? 9%. Price to yield 9%. Go across 9%. Down 10 years for a lump stream of payments?
6.418.
The one you're looking at is the one for this second one here. So,
thank you, Rachel.
So $60 times 6.418, 1,000 times?
You got the damn thing in front of you.
We do?
Yes, you do. Where is the damn table? Go across to 9% down 10 years.
422.
Okay. So 60 times 6.418? 3.08. 1,000 times 422? 422. Add the two together. 800. 800 what?
807.
Is it a discount bond?
Yes.
Okay. The answer key and a commentary are on the website. You need to be able to do these. Baffle the brokers. Just put them up here. Shuffle them all together. And we'll see you on Thursday when we will tie everything together in